Hello and welcome, Hacker Public Radio listeners, to another episode of Finnix's Student Hacker's Guide to Linux. My name's Aaron Finnan, but as usual, you guys can call me Finnix. Well, yet again this month, I've had a successful interview with Benny Kiedesliegers. He is one of the organizers of an event called BrewCon, and is also a security consultant as well. I should warn you, the sound quality of the interview, there is a slight problems here and there, but for most parts it's listenable. I can only apologise for this. I hope you guys enjoy, and I'll speak to you all soon. Welcome, Hacker Public Radio listeners. I'm speaking to a good friend of mine, Benny, on Skype. Benny, could you introduce yourself to the Hacker Public Radio listeners?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. My name is Benny Kiedesliegers. I'm a security consultant for small Belgium company in Belgium. I started as a system administrator, like a lot of us probably did. Then I moved on to network admin and network architectures after a few years. But I've always been very interested in the security aspects of that, so I was always firewall related, intrusion detection systems, etc., system hardening, and actually stumbled into security consulting, something I've always wanted to do, and I've been doing that for 2.5 years.
And you're enjoying it? Yeah,
yeah, but it's like jumping in the deep end of the pool. Like, there's so much you can do in security. I think a few years back you could do a bit of everything and be a generalist, and that's almost impossible today. I think a few of my friends are pen testers, and if I look at that, you see that there's really a split into two domains: network pen testing and application pen testing. And a lot of the people I know specialize in one of the two. It's almost impossible to be the best in both.
Okay, so Benny, what's sort of like your day-to-day routine as a security consultant then?
Well, I know it's hard, but I still try to be a generalist, so it really depends on the assignments that were given to me. One week I could be installing a firewall. The other week I could be writing security policies for companies. And because I was really interested in that part as well, because a technical installation is still quite easy. It's just follow the manual, configure it. But then if you really look at an organization on that level, is what do you need to allow? What are the business risks? And, it's been very interesting to have a look on that side as well.
What sort of advice would you give for people who are interested in getting into security? What sort of, after the lessons that you've learned, what sort of advice would you give someone who came to you and said, I really want to get into being a security consultant? What should I watch out for?
That there are a few good security resources that you can start to follow. Of course, there's a lot you can find off the internet, but I like to follow security blogs, and there are a few good ones in the security blog network. It's like a concentration of security feeds. There are better ones in there, and there are a few that aren't that good. But you can subscribe to that and then look at the best ones and then unsubscribe and just subscribe on the ones you really like.
Yeah, just kind of test them and see, sort of thing.
Yeah, because some are related to business risks or business continuity. Some are pen testing related, forensics. And you really need to look at what you're interested in, because if you try to follow them all, and I've tried it, it's too much, it's information overload, especially if you start with Twitter.
So how much of the day would you think that you spend reading blogs then? I mean, I know I spend, God knows, I must spend at least an hour a day, and if I don't spend an hour a day reading them, I'll have to spend 2 hours the next day. But do you spend
Well,
like
it's exactly the same.
We were speaking to Chris John Riley recently, and he was saying that, you know, if you take a week away from your email and your blogs, you know, you're gonna have to spend about a week reading it all back up again. And I couldn't agree anymore with Blake.
Yeah, and I think Twitter depends if you have a mobile that allows you to follow the tweets during the day or not. I use a netbook and a 3G connection, and if I have a break, I tend to try to really catch up to them, so I don't have to spend an hour in the evening catching up on all the messages. Because actually, well, there's the blogs that I follow, but actually, like, a lot of people describe Twitter as microblogging. That's true, I think, because a lot of the interesting article and links that I read, I get from Twitter, and it's really faster and interactive, and, well, you can respond to people, ask questions, give your opinion, and it's really more interactive than just blogging.
I think Twitter is a very good way for people to distribute information quickly. If they find an interesting link, if they write an interesting blog article, it just seems I was a bit dubious about the 140 characters at the first, but I kind of like the short, sweet snap, and come and have a look at this, boom, and you know, and I have quite a few people on my Twitter as well, and I couldn't agree more. You find out a lot of first-hand information through your Twitter contacts, things that people have actually found in real time that they're actually dealing with there and then, rather than, you know, what you're coming across in feeds, which might be a couple of days old and so on and so forth. But it's a great tool, Twitter. I'm a big Twitter fan, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's after a time it starts to be a little bit addictive.
I mean, I'm lucky. I don't have it on my mobile phone. I'm not much of a mobile phone person, to be honest with you. I spend enough time in front of a computer to, you know, if you can't get me by email, you really just can't get me. It's the long and short of that. But I am incredibly lazy. I have Twitter Fox, because my kind of whole logic to that is if I don't have a web browser window open, I'm not doing any, you know, I'm not working on anything. So I've got my head down in something. I don't get caught up with clients or anything like that. I just get myself into trouble if I did.
Yeah, I understand. Do you know the security tweets list?
I actually haven't come across it, so it's news to me.
Well, it's like the security blogger network from Alan Schimmel, but then Twitter focused. So actually, it's just a directory of security people on Twitter. And if you Google security tweets, you will find that it's on the nowhere.org, I think. Website. It's managed by Zach, and well, there's a perfect list to begin with.
Super.
And some really interesting people on it.
I'll have to look into that. That's a good bit of information.
Yeah, nowhere.org with a zero instead of the O.
Right. Can you hear me typing away in the background here? Right. What sort of kind of security threats do you come across in your day-to-day kind of business?
Well, it's more like the organizational risks that focus on productivity and new installation, and they actually don't take the time or have the resources to really maintain their system. And with that, I mean patch management, looking at logs, really maintenance of the environment, and you see that a lot.
So, I mean, would you say it's kind of when you go into an organization or a company that, you know, sometimes they're kind of unprepared for the realism of what's actually out there?
Well, it depends on the activity of the company. It's a financial institution, those people really have a higher risk of being attacked. attacked, and they tend to be more aware of the importance of security, and a lot of other companies don't have the same mentality, and it really depends on really the governance and the IT management of that environment. And you can have two companies in the same industry and still be a lot different from each other.
I think you raise a fair point, especially with finance institutes, because they've been such targets for so long that you know, I think it's a case of, you know, and sometimes maybe it's a case of what Mrs. Jones has, because another finance institute is looking at having a security consultant come in, then, you know, we should have a security consultant come in. And because I suppose that atmosphere in finance is, they're so used to being targets. I suppose it's a lot different for a company that, you know, makes engine parts or something, where, you know, they probably don't have to think about them being a target for black hats as much.
Well, I think most companies do have a basic level of security, and it's actually a lot easier to just target home users or the clients, because, well, the average person isn't really aware of security and how to secure his computer, because it's become really, really difficult. Because even if you have automatic Windows updates, a lot of people tend to forget all of the plugins and additional software that they have installed, and there isn't enough of controls and checks on that. I'm talking about Acrobat Reader, PDFs, readers. There's a lot of issues at the moment with that one, a lot of discussion with the lack of patches that were available from Adobe, because there was active exploitation on the internet in that one. QuickTime, Flash Player, just to name a few of them.
So would you say kind of one of the biggest then is maybe the lack of, I don't want education, because that's such a strong term to use, but the lack of understanding that some home users have, that their system is vulnerable to a whole host of problems, and thus from there can be used in a whole host of other things, like, you know, the BBC botnet scandal and all of this sort of stuff.
Well, we've been telling people to patch their systems, but with patching, they know, well, the Windows update button, that isn't enough today anymore, and install an antivirus, and then install a firewall and antivirus, and then you should be safe. And that was maybe true 2 years ago. Today it's just not enough anymore.
I mean, the flip side as well is, you know, that's just one vector as well. I mean, never mind how people are vulnerable from, you know, web host attacks as well, and you know, the forums that the members of having their email address and password stolen from those forum databases, and deploying such poor password security as, you know, as them to have the same email address and password for their Hotmail account, their PayPal account, their Gmail account, and, you know, we're just talking about the threats that they're having at the home computer, never mind what's actually happening in the internet as a whole as well. I mean, it amazes me. I mean, I was listening to a talk yesterday about, you know, web hacking, and, you know, the guy was saying, you know, if we take a shared host and we pop all of those websites and we get all of those databases, and we have in the end 50,000 email addresses, you know, even if a small percentage of those people are using the same Hotmail address and password as what their Hotmail account is, then, you know, the chances are they're going to do the same for their PayPal and blah 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 blah. And it just amazes me when you think about how few people you would meet in the street actually appreciate the severity of something like that.
Yeah, and you see another problem arising. That's the social networks and Facebook, and because people tend to put too much information on their profiles, and then like you got a few incidents like the Yahoo account of Senator Palin that got hacked by just using public information. And I've known...
Did you hear about Kevin Mitnick on Facebook?
Yeah, that is really funny. Like, just, yeah, this account suspended because there were that many fake accounts and they thought his was also a fake. And, well, actually, he couldn't prove to
them. He'd registered with a fake name, hadn't he? He'd registered with a fake name, as far as I understand. And he was having great problems in proving he actually was Kevin Mitnick. And I think he said... I think I read it on the Register, and I think he said something like, you know, I've had a career of being able to prove that quite convincingly I'm whoever I say I am, and now I need to prove I'm exactly who I am. I can't do it. But I thought that was a brilliant twist of fate, to be
true,
honest with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I suppose then in reality it goes without saying that you kind of think one of the biggest security threats in the future is users not understanding that they need to start protecting themselves rather than expecting someone else to do it.
Well, user education could help, but the question is, who's going to do it?
I think it's a great point. I think at the end of the day, you can't ask a company to take responsibility. You know, at the end of the day, I've said this before, you know, you wouldn't jump into a car without, you know, learning how to drive first. And, you know, and I think in reality with computing as well, that you know, it is up to the responsibility of the user to go out and make sure what they're doing is a secure environment. I mean, hacking's not a hidden term anymore. I mean, it's in the papers every single day. I mean, I find it hard to believe that anyone who's using a computer doesn't realize that there could be someone out there trying to get their data. I think that, you know, they say this in UK law, ignorance isn't a defense. You know, I'm not saying that black hats are right or anything like that, but at the end of the day, you know, some users need to start taking responsibility for their own safety.
Well, actually, I had an interesting discussion with a friend online, and we used the same comparison that you just did. But I said to him, well, we were making a little bit fun of end users, that they don't take enough responsibility and that they don't take enough measures to protect themselves, to patch their systems, etc. And actually, I said to him, well, looking on another point of view, I drive a car, I know how to drive it, but if anything happens to the engine, I wouldn't know how to fix it myself. And isn't that more, a little bit more, the same analogy?
Well, yeah, you could go down that route, but, you know, I'm not saying to users when the hard drive breaks they should know how to fix it. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, if the graphics card burns up, they shouldn't take it to a computer shop and they shouldn't get it fixed that way. That's not kind of my point that I'm trying to make. At the end of the day, it was just that, like I say, I mean, it's just about vigilance. I mean, I suppose in fairness, the other analogy we could use is that you wouldn't leave the house with the front door wide open, so why would you leave your network wide open? You know, that sort of stuff, but you're right as well. I mean, as an industry as well, I suppose we need to start taking some responsibility in you know, educating. I think that the security industry is doing quite a lot at the moment. You think about how many of us guys are all out there blogging and doing stuff, and it's quite interesting, I suppose.
Yeah, but I know some of the other security consultants and security bloggers that one of the tools that we really like to check our systems for missing security patches is an online scanner from Secunia. I don't know if you know it, Secunia Online Security Inspector.
No, I've not come across it, no.
Well, it actually looks at your system, and it doesn't matter if it's Winamp or QuickTime, or if it's not the latest version, it will just put it in the report, and you are like missing this version and that patch, and it's really hard to get a 100% up-to-date system. Even we who are security experts and consultants, well, there's a lot of software on your PC that you forget about that could be upgraded. And I haven't run it in a while. I'm a little bit afraid to do it. I do tend to install the most important patches, but
I think you're right. I think the probably the worst culprits for secure systems is probably security people. You never take your own advice. It's like telling people to back up. You never do it yourself, do you?
Well, I'm guilty on that one. I never do it. Luckily, most of my information is online.
Out in the cloud. Much the same.
Out in the cloud. I didn't want to say that.
It's such,
because that will take us to a whole other discussion.
It's such the buzzword at the moment, the cloud. But yeah, mine's much the same. Everything's out on the internet as well. What's kind of like your? I'll put you in a spot for a second. I mean, what's your top security tip then for use home users?
Well, actually, the one I just mentioned isn't a bad one. Most security consultants or the people I chat with online use Secunia to just check the health of their own PCs, and that's the best tip I can give today. If you Google Secunia OSI Online Software Inspector, it's probably the first link that you'll find.
Okay, and how do you spell Secunia?
S-E-C-U-N-I-A.
So that's S-E-C-U-N-I-A. Yeah. Right, okay. Super.
You can install it. I think it's free for home use. Then it's the personal software inspector, or just use it like an ActiveX plugin. I think also it works with Java, so you don't need to have to use the ActiveX.
Right. I think I've kind of asked you all the security questions that I want to ask, and I've got a question that I want to ask you now, and I know this is going to take us down a very interesting path. But what are your plans for the future, Benny? I'm hoping you'll mention BrewCon.
Well, that's present and future. We started with the idea to have a security/hacker conference in Belgium, because there are a few really cool ones in the Netherlands, Hacking at Random, and in Germany, the Chaos Computer Congress. And there were a few friends of mine who said, wouldn't it be cool to have something like that in Belgium? And before we knew it, we were talking about how we could start it and looking for venues to organize it. And I think in January we said, well, we're about ready to really start. And we made a reservation for a venue. We started with websites, we launched a call of papers, and I think it's now 3 months far. The call of paper is still open for people who are interested, and we have some people that we already confirmed, like Christopher Hoff with his cloud computing talk, which I'm really looking forward to. And well, actually, I'm not going to give out too much details, because really a lot still has to be decided. The call of paper is still open. The workshops are getting organized. Some of the hacker spaces in Europe are coming. You can actually look up a directory of different hacker spaces in around the world. Hackerspaces.org. I don't know if you know about that website.
I think I've come across it before, actually. Not for a while, but I think I have, yeah. So, for the HPR audience, you've basically been organizing a security congress in Brussels. So how much time has this been taking out of your day-to-day life then, Benny?
Well, a lot of my evenings, because there's a lot of organization involved, just trying to figure out what kind of system we were going to use for the website, for the wiki that we wanted to launch, the mailing list, looking for people, volunteers who want to help, reaching out to speakers, because of course it was the first edition and we are not that known to speakers, so we just looked a bit around for people that could be really interesting for our event, and just sent them an email. Some were people that we met at other security conferences, and well, it's really starting to pick up also on the volunteer side, the sponsors, because we said we don't want to have a big commercial event, more an event for the security community. So we want to really try to have low income prices, so that even students could come and just, well, learn about security and, well, maybe have a career in security.
I noticed your media sponsors are Hack9.
Well, that's one of the media partners that we have. That's a Hacking 9 magazine that should be quite known with some of the security pentesters.
We have a subscription to that at the university and everything like that. It's a very popular popular magazine with some of the boys.
I have one myself.
So, just I understand your event's on September the 18th to September the 19th. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And for people who are wanting to try and find more information about your event, they can visit, is it www.brucon.org, which is brucon.org, is that right?
That's the one, yeah, and there's everything on there. The most up-to-date information is more in the form of a blog, so if you're announcing workshops or speakers, it's more on the blog at this moment, but if we have enough, then we will put it really in an overview, the program with all the speakers and all the workshops. But that should be ready end of next month, so when the call of papers is really done and we've finished with reviewing everything.
So if someone from the Hacker Public Radio audience was in Belgium and thought they could give, you know, thought they could add something to BrewCon, or if they knew someone, they could get in contact with you in the next couple of weeks and maybe submit something to you to see, you know, that those options are still open at the moment then.
Yeah, normally the call of papers is ending end of March, but because some of the organizers will be taking a few days of holiday beginning of April, we don't have time to review everything, so if you submit something in the first week of April, it should be fine.
You'll have a look. No promises.
Well, I think about after the first week, by 10th of April, we will take the entire list, go through it, well, make some decisions, and then contact everyone to see what's really interesting and what's not. And I've seen some submissions about SQL injection, and well, of course, we won't have 5 talks about SQL injection, because, you know, well, one good talk about SQL injection is more than enough. But it's quite diverse at this moment. But the thing I'm a bit missing is the non-security talks, like law, privacy. I haven't seen too many of those, and well, if you know someone who could give an interesting talk about privacy issues regarding RFID, data surveillance, CCTV, well, just go to our website and let us know.
Okay, and if anyone's wanting to help out and volunteer, can they get in contact with you through the site as well? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a link to the email address, so just drop us a note. If you want to give a workshop, some of the hacker spaces are going to do something with Arduino. I don't know if I pronounce it correctly. It's a really popular PCB board that you can use to make sandwich robots, apparently. That's one of the things I've seen online. Like sudo, make me a sandwich.
It's the best way of explaining sudo to anyone. If people haven't seen that comic strip before, there's a I'll link to it in the show notes. It's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, it's cruel.
Is there kind of anything you want to kind of promote about BrewCon this year? Is there anything you kind of want to get out to people?
Well, it's really an open event. If you have something that you think is interesting, just submit it and we can talk about it. Because we made a decision to have it at the end of the week, and the second day is on a Saturday. We had the idea to make it a little bit of a family event, and maybe to have some kind of a hacker workshop for kids. So we're still looking for some fun ideas for that. So if you know something to do, program robots or something like that, well, let us know.
Benny, do you have a blog?
I have a blog. It's called Security for All with the number 4. And I've been blogging on that one for the last 2 years. And I'm a bit ashamed to say that with BrewCon I haven't blogged much last month.
Right, well, there's I'll link to your blog and BrewCon in my show notes and everything like that. Is there kind of anything obviously I've asked you about BrewCon, but is there anything you kind of want to talk about with the Hacker Public Radio listeners, or have we covered everything? I'm not meaning to put you on the hop there, sorry. It's just like, is you know, just wrapping up, if there's anything else that you'd like people to know about?
I cannot think of anything at this moment. Besides my blog and the BrewCon organization, there isn't much time left.
I was going to say, you're not going to have much time at all. Benny, I'd like to thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you. It's been fantastic, and I've been very interested. And I'd like to wish you all the success with BrewCon this year. We'll certainly be rooting for you. And everyone listening out in Hacker Public Radio land, if you do know anyone that can help Benny out, volunteers or course of speakers, please get in contact with him. It sounds like this is going to be a really, really interesting event. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens here. And all that's left for me to do is thank you all for listening. And once again, thank my guest, Benny. Benny, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to also discuss BrewCon and my blog. And well, it's been a fun experience doing an interview on Skype for the first time.
Yeah, Skype, for any people that ever plan to do interviews on Skype, just I warn you, Skype is the most unreliable thing when it comes. It must just be my natural persona. When I touch anything to do with Skype, it just seems to crackle and break all the time. But fingers crossed this has come across well. Anyway, thanks very much, Hacker Public Radio listeners, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.